Scott Hamburger, Ashburn District.
Don Walker, Catoctin.
Hoof Cures, Broad Run.
Excellent.
6:14.
Do we need...
6:14 p.m.
Scott, do we need more than the three of us?
We have a quorum, so we can get started. So what I would suggest is we look through the minutes. John said he would be here, but since it's quarter after, we should probably start. And he can jump in when he gets here. Have you guys had a chance to review the minutes of the last meeting?
Yeah, one on the second page. There's a quote attributed to me that I don't remember saying or knowing anything about. about taking advantage of daycare and getting a tax benefit and getting double benefiting. That's not something I'm even familiar with, so I don't think I made that comment.
I think that was Mr. Walker. But that was a different context. The context had to do with re-indexing of pay based on a different... There had been a different pay scale in the past, and the state had rectified that.
Let's back up a little bit on that. Cliff, go back on what that was, what you're talking about.
Hey, John. We're going over the minutes. I was only here 3 minutes before you, so.
Right here?
Yeah, page two.
Yep.
Flip it over. Second sentence, and that's what Mr. Kears brought up, the point that blah, blah, blah. So that wasn't me. I know who brought that point up, but it wasn't me.
Well, Mr. Kears brought up the point that there are people taking advantage of the county daycare program.
Are still getting a tax benefit from the federal government for those same services, resulting in double benefiting.
Well, I don't get credit for that either.
Okay. I mean, I think in theory, the statement could be true.
He wants to strike it.
I think he should strike it, since I'm going to go on and say it. Any other
Mr. Kears hates daycare. It's really sad.
No, he just hates people.
What was the quote attributed to Mr. Hamburger there in Leesburg Today or something? Somebody wrote in on that one.
Oh, what was that quote?
I don't recall now either. I kind of blew the whole thing off, but somebody didn't take kindly to what you said. It was in one of the editorials.
I don't know.
I'll go see if I still have it.
I make it a point never to read what people say about me, so there you go.
That's because you're not a lawyer.
There you go. All right, very good. So then I'll move to approve the minutes, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay with you.
As amended.
Second. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, review of county fees. Everybody get the summary of fees by department and program?
I received it. Have not had a chance to
This is the first look at it for us.
I got a document that doesn't have the numbers on it. Is that?
Yeah.
Summary of fees by department and program. It's got the department, the program, and the fee title. But it doesn't have the numbers. Is that what you all have?
We did not include fees because the schedules are like pages and pages.
So be so hundreds of
pages. We weren't sure if you wanted to just get an idea of all the fees and who charges them, and then make a decision as to areas you want to go into. It was kind of a judgment call, but the feeling was that if we gave you schedules and schedules, I don't know that would have helped you.
Yes.
So
no.
The kind of information that I would sort of be curious to look at is for these different categories is what is the cost of the fee? What are we charging? And how much is the county spending to provide that service?
So you want a subsidy calculation.
And then, so it gives me some sense of, you know, if we're charging a $10 fee and the county's spending $150 to do it, you know, maybe we don't say we're going to charge a full $150, but we think $10 might be too low. It might be more reasonable for that type of service for somebody to pay $50. To get some sense of, you know, what we're charging, what it's costing the government to provide that service, and whether that amount could be changed.
If I might add as well, if it's all right, Cliff here, I agree with what he's saying. Without having any numbers on here, it just tells us they're doing something here, but it doesn't tell us what. and we need to know what it, exactly what Cliff said, what it's costing, and what we're getting from it, or else we would have no idea which one of these we might want to look at with a recommendation.
My question is, do you want the fee schedule for every single fee? There are a lot of fees on this list. There are a lot of schedules that go along with these fees. There is a lot of effort that goes into doing that. I don't mind doing it. I'm perfectly okay with doing it. But I just want to make sure that the committee understands what it's getting when we do that. And I don't know, you know, part of what I heard was you're interested in subsidy level. So if you're interested in subsidy level, you know, we can give you the fee schedule for that too. It's just, you know, some of these fees are per hour. Some of these fees are going to be per task. Some of these fees, you know, so there's a whole mismatch of how things get charged depending on what it is.
Like some of these, I don't even understand what they mean. Like the sheriff's office, okay, good conduct letter. What does that mean? If somebody gets a good conduct letter, we charge them a fee to get the letter? I don't even know what it's telling me what the charge, who's getting the fee.
If you're being sentenced to a, or you have a probation violation or something, they charge you a fee to write a letter from the sheriff's office or probation office
to
help you out.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I know what that is.
I mean,
I would.
My thought is, if I may, mm-hmm. some of these, like the FOIA fees, for example, are 100%. And Tim, correct me if I'm wrong. These are 100% reimbursement for what people make FOIA requests. It might make sense to eliminate right. those that are a wash. You know, in other words.
That's what I was
the ones where the county spends nothing to provide it so long as the fee pays the cost, right?
It's a variable fee based on actual
exactly.
cost.
Exactly. Some of them, we're not recouping 100% of the cost of providing that service.
Right.
You know, and some of it is an estimate of what the cost would be were we to actually quantify it. Like a good conduct letter, we don't know what that... I mean, it's a deputy sheriff who happens to work in the jail writing a letter, and we charge a fee because statutorily we're allowed to do that.
It's a flat fee.
Right, exactly. So there could be kind of like the privatization analysis. You could eliminate different categories of fees from our analysis and start looking at the ones that we really want to look at to save the county money.
Right.
If that's the view.
You mentioned statutorily they can charge a fee. Are there some fees that were limited to how much we can charge?
Well, all fees you're generally limited. You can't make a profit off. So
I understand that, but if it says for this service you can charge $20, it doesn't matter what it costs you. The most you can charge is $20.
Well, like the FOIA fees, there's a cap.
So I would eliminate those because we don't really have any control over that.
Right.
Regardless of whether it's costing the county
money
or not,
is,
we don't have the ability to just say, well, we think you should increase it.
Yeah, right.
So without the numbers, we can't do anything. We really can't. We're kind of stuck without numbers on it because it's not going to make any sense to us.
Well, it was helpful to me to look at what we were talking about to be able to think in my mind, okay, what do we really want to look at? Because you can eliminate the ones where if you want this information from a Freedom of Information Act request, then the maximum the county can charge is X dollars. I'm not sure that we really are productive in saying, let's look at that.
And
but
furthermore, the county has no option but to comply
right.
with the FOIA request.
So charging a fee to comply with a request at the maximum statutory level is probably more cost-effective otherwise because taxpayers are funding it. But like, you know...
So we should eliminate all FOIA-related fees?
That would be one example, exactly. We should eliminate the ones where we actually, you know, where it's a wash. But if you look at, like, for example, there are a lot of library services, animal services, transportation services, where...
Transportation services are essentially your bus fare.
Is that right? Okay. So I suppose we could look at whether we're overcharging or undercharging. I mean,
but you're going to get two numbers. So, for example, it's roughly 80% cost recovery on the commuter system.
We get 80% the county, the riders on the bus are paying 80% of the cost of riding that bus?
Yes, sir.
That's what's happening?
On the commuter right. system.
On the commuter system. And
to me, that is one very worthy of looking at, because it's not some of the rides them every day, but the times I've gone down, those buses are packed
right.
with people. And the fee that's charged is still less than what would cost me to get in my car and drive there and back, which leads me to think, why are we still subsidizing that when, in my mind, you could raise that fee, and it's still cheaper than for the person to actually get in their car and drive. And we keep adding buses, and man, they're packed.
So is it maybe looking at just the fees we subsidize?
I think that was a good way. Any case where we have fees where we're basically recouping the cost, eliminate those. Fees that aren't discretionary, which means we're charging what we can, doesn't matter what the cost is, we really can't increase those fees, eliminate those, and then see what's left.
Yep, it's a good approach.
I mean, now the total number of these dollar fees amount to, just of all these pages with the bottom line, what would it be? Are we talking about millions or hundreds of thousands? Do you have any idea?
Well, it would be in the millions. Transit alone.
I don't know if anybody could come up with that off the top of their head, because it's so vast. I mean, there's so many different things in here.
We have that.
Well, you went and looked it up. Yeah, I know you got it, but sitting here off the top of our heads would...
But it's going to be in the millions.
Yeah. Tim, what do you suggest the best way to...
Well, we can go ahead and eliminate all the fees where we collect 100%.
Does everybody agree that's kind of the right
approach? We can
eliminate
anything that is statutorily applied, which is what I think you're saying. So the statute says you're going to charge this. And
right.
That's what you charge. So... And we can see where that comes out.
I mean, my thought is just where we subsidize and we're not making 100% return on the fee, we look at where the county is spending money that's not recouped by the fees.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That makes the most sense to me.
If we oversimplified it and said that it's worth $10 to ride the bus and we're charging $8, so we're going to recommend the board to raise it to $10, I think we've still got a bargain going on there, and it can be self-supporting.
Absolutely.
So for me to get in my car and drive to D.C., it's one way is $20. If I jump on the Greenway and pay the toll road plus the gas, it costs me $20 each way, and we charge $7 or $8 to ride the bus.
Okay.
And we talked about that early on, by the way, months ago, as an example, something to look at. Another thing that I think would be useful would be some context. You know, so to the degree that we're able to benchmark off of what local other jurisdictions are charging for a similar service, I think it would be very useful to see. We talked about that in the context of the ambulance fees, for example. It was very useful to know every other jurisdiction around us is charging for the service and we're not. So some some comparison would be useful. And then another thing that we've come across a couple of times, and we looked at this in adult daycare, one of the conclusions that we came to was that there is no private sector corollary to that particular service which is being offered. There's some debate behind that, but at the end of the day, we reached the conclusion that there's not a private sector party ready to provide this service. So to the degree that you have knowledge as to whether a similar service is available in the private sector, that would be good to know as part of the analysis.
Right.
If that's data.
So we're whittling this down to some things that can be looked at and some that either aren't worth it or can't.
Right.
That makes a lot of good sense, and they may cut a whole lot out of this.
Right. And some of the stuff you have to, you got to charge what you charge, and some of it is just breaking even. But where we actually lose money on the deal, that may be where we focus.
Well, if we want to use this as an opportunity, I hope, to open up some other avenues to be examined. For example, and it is an example, not a pick on target or something. But we look at the commuter bus situation that Cliff has mentioned there, riding it and so forth. We look at that. One other possibility of revenue that might not be addressed at all because there is no, is I suspect the commuter parking lots. Now, we've got commuter parking lots that are a good thing, but they're being totally subsidized, so we can't say we're supplementing them because I think they're totally bought out of the taxpayers' money.
Right.
And, you know, we might want to look and say, hey, That's a possibility to be examined.
Right.
Do you have any information to give us in that regard, Tim? Do we charge for the parking?
We do not charge for parking at commuter parking lots.
And the commuter parking lot itself would have been fully capitalized, so it would be a balance sheet item for the county. There would be no ongoing operational, other than maintenance or resurfacing.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the commuter parking lots are proper. So they've been either built by the developer or they're constructed with proper funds. So now there are a few. There are a couple that we did pay for out of county dollars.
But well, even if we didn't, we've got some maintenance to be considered on it and some oversight.
Absolutely.
Which should be reflected in a very minimal cost to be there.
Not to mention.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I need to check and see if we're maintaining these out of the commuter bus fares.
Well, one of the considerations.
They maybe maintain that at gas tax.
Look further on that specific example. One of the things, if we decided to look and go the direction of requesting a fee to park in there, then that's going to lead up to. They're going to have the parking sticker or whatever it is, then you're going to have enforcement on it. But we should follow that up with a recommendation to the county that any enforcement on it be used under a local code instead of a state code. So any revenue generated by the deputies having to patrol it there would come back to the county to offset that instead of going to the state coffers.
If we go down that road towards parking,
On those, we'd probably just install revenue equipment.
Yeah.
A gate.
Just be like your metro.
Yeah. I almost look at our large open air, like all open air parking lots. I almost think it'd be better if it could be enrolled into the fee that's charged for the bus service.
Right. Yeah.
But if we decide that it's so popular, we need to build a parking garage, then I think you can look at a fee to park your vehicle. But like the Leesburg commuter lot, you know, to go to enforcements of pay to park, the cost involved, there's a certain amount of cost involved just to be able to make sure you collect the fees.
I think Jim had the better answer.
It's mostly capital equipment.
Yeah, I would rather, if we decide that we're going to raise the rate to ride the bus $1 or something to cover that cost and then recoup the money that way, would make more sense.
Assuming that all the people using the parking lot are using it to ride the bus. Because there could be people using it to carpool. I don't know what the use of the parking lots is.
My guess would be the majority on the bus, but there could be other.
There are separate commuter parking lots scattered throughout the county. It's independent of the commuter bus lots.
Yeah. Well, that's an example to look at for things that we could be looking into for revenue generation. So that should be self-supporting there rather than totally taxpayer support. That's just an idea of something to look into, not a single thing to look at.
Plus, I also like the idea if the bus can be financially self-supportive rather than relying on county subsidies, there's a lot of debate about what's going to happen when Metro opens. Does that mean all of the runs to D.C. end and all the buses will just take you to the Metro stop? There are a lot of people that would still prefer to be able to sit on the bus and ride the bus. Well, if the buses are independently funded and not relying on county subsidies, they may choose to continue to offer those services because they can afford them. So, I don't know.
It's a good debate.
To Don's point, you know, obviously this shows us what we are actually charging for. If we're not actually charging for it, it won't be on here. So from a certain point of view, we don't know what we don't know because it's not on the list. So is there,
that's true.
Yeah,
I mean, we may not know something. Yeah, you're right.
So I wonder, is there any kind of a filter, or is there any kind of a trap we can run to look at things that other jurisdictions may charge for that we do not charge for?
Yes, I think. I mean, it's a manual process, but I don't think there's much that we don't charge for that we can charge for. So.
Is it worth a cursory look, or do you think it's okay?
Well, a lot of that data we tried to capture in the program review document.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'd probably go back and look at that and see if there are things that we can statutorily charge for that we're not charging for.
Hmm.
because some things were precluded. So, you know, a good example is libraries. You're precluded from charging for a lot of the services in the library because it's supposed to be free service to whoever goes in there. So we'll have to, we can go back and scrub that.
Just to, I mean, to tag onto the bus discussion, that if we do start adding fees, we've got to consider what's the consequence. That, you know, if the bus rates go up, for example, how many more cars does that add to the road, and is that a desired consequence or not?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I agree with that.
And that was what I was looking at. So I think right now when I take the bus downtown, it costs me $8. If I jumped in my car and drove, it's $20. Between the toll roads and the gas, it cost me $20. That bus fee would have to get awfully high before I decide it's no longer worth it. That's all.
Well, anytime you raise anybody's fee, the person that's paying it out of his pocket is going to be the one screaming the loudest. But it is also for all of us to consider that we're here for everybody, not just the guy paying and screaming now. We are also here for the other, how many hundred thousand taxpayers and Nixon's silent majority that aren't speaking. So, you know, we're looking at it all the way around. And to be reasonable about it, yeah, I think there'd be some fussing and grumbling and probably some nasty emails and otherwise. And probably those same folks that are going to fuss about it, if it went from $8 to $10, they'd get right on it again tomorrow because they're going to get down to the fact that it's still half of paying the $20. Right.
Plus the hassle of not having to drive. And I know a lot of federal employees, they can actually count the time they're sitting on the bus on their email. They can count that towards their hours during the day. So there are a lot of benefits to people to ride the bus rather than drive their car into work.
All good points.
So I think where we're headed is we're scoping this, certainly. And I think we've got a good start on that. So the next step is once we get... we narrow that down is to discuss each individual, which I was not overwhelmed by this list for purpose. I mean, we don't have a huge agenda in this subcommittee right now that would preclude us from focusing on this for the next few meetings. So I think once we scope it down a little bit less, I think we're in a pretty good spot to be able to consider.
So to the as far as our workload, so did we reach a final decision on what working with the school board and looking at combining?
Well, that's number four. Phase? We'll get to that. Okay. We'll get to next steps of that. Let's close this out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I make one more request?
Yeah.
So when the information comes back and it goes to the point that you raised, tell me your name.
David O'Brien.
Hi, David. Goes to the point that David raised, I think it would be very good to see at least a subtotal by area as to the total amount of fees collected and the total corresponding expense within that subtotal, which will then also help us direct our attention to the areas that mean the most.
Right.
I would like to make further comment, too, when y'all are ready, before we move to item four. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. This potentially, because since we don't have any numbers in front of us and we don't know what we're working on here, these areas could potentially be one of the biggest impacts this board could make in terms of some sort of a genuine tax savings to the county or an offset in the cost to the county. Now, this could be one of the biggest things we can turn in to show for our work for money that might be able to be done. I know the first meeting we attended, I said, Government Reform Commission. That means to change and change for the better. Well, if that could be a possibility of savings. You know, we're not out looking for waste, fraud, and abuse, and otherwise. We're looking for something to be on equal footing and fair standing for everybody that could be a major source of money. Number two, this thing didn't get everything it's supposed to get. As we talked at one of the previous meetings, we're not only looking at what we are supplementing or subsidizing in terms of these things, what the county pays versus what it costs, but we're also looking at other areas that are being supplemented. Now, that's going to go to a whole lot of staffing areas that are being supplemented by the county where that's supposed to be part of this. It's supposed to be two-part, not just a subsidy, but it's supposed to cover supplements. So we want to know who's getting paid as well by the county.
Right.
Well, that's a different issue. That is not what I understood you all were looking at.
We brought that up in the meeting.
I'm not sure I understood the distinction that you're drawing.
Well, it's a dual thing here, and we brought that up at one of our previous meetings, that it's not just what we're subsidizing, but it's also what we're supplementing. Because in some cases, we're supplementing people's pay from the county that are...
This is what I was talking about earlier when I said you had brought something up.
Yep.
Where there was a restructuring,
yep,
of pay at the Commonwealth level, and yet there were existing subsidies,
right,
that were in place. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so it's kind of a dual thing that we're looking at here.
Which was not in the mandate that the board gave us on this particular matter, but
right,
there's nothing to preclude us from taking it up as a separate issue.
Yes.
Okay. Is that something that the group wants, Mr. Chairman? Is that something you want?
I don't know where to start with that. Is there a?
Well,
you're talking about county employee and
there are two separate issues. Okay.
Clearly,
one is. The one we've been talking about is services that are provided that charge a fee,
right,
where there is a subsidy from the taxpayer.
Correct.
Okay, so the meat of your discussion is going to start on the fees, start on page 4, that go through the end of this document, which,
right,
are going to be your parks and rec fees, and,
right,
you all will get into some significant discussion on that because of what's there.
If it would clarify it any further for you,
excuse me,
go ahead.
Don is talking about is separate from that. The county provides services that are provided by both county employees and state employees. So, for example, juvenile court services has both county employees and state employees. The health department has both county employees and state employees.
Right.
Because of the state pay scale, which is lower than the county pay scale, starting in the mid-80s, somewhere in that time period, the county pays a subsidy to state employees to equalize their pay rate.
Is that what you're talking about?
It is, and I recall one from social services back in the 80s.
But that's different from a fee issue. Where,
yeah,
the
understood.
It's entirely different. I recall one from back in the 80s with social services, where the state was so far behind all the time, it was just almost comical. But I think today a lot of those have been brought to the level they should be, but the county's still paying it, and they've never gone back to look again.
Does anybody have an objection to including that in the scope of our...
I don't have an objection to it. Does Mr. Hemstreet have a reaction to the general principle? What is your view of the situation overall?
I think we look at it every year, so it's, you know, because we also don't want to be in a situation where we have state employees who are receiving a county subsidy that are making more than county employees. So it's something that gets reviewed on an annual basis. It's done via an MOU between the Board of Supervisors and the specific Department of the Commonwealth whose employees, you know, are belong to, and that MOU sets the subsidy rate. In fact, the Commonwealth changed the rules of how those subsidies can be paid in the General Assembly last year, so we're in the process of redoing all the MOUs right now, and those will be going to the board this month and next month, actually. So I don't believe it's a situation where those subsidies have were set a long time ago and haven't been looked at since.
So I'm kind of intrigued by this. I'm trying to get an understanding of, you have a service that the state provides, and then
the sheriff,
and the county.
Statutorily, the sheriff gets paid $120,000 a year. Okay? By statute, he's required to make 10% more than the next chief deputy. Okay? In order to have a chief deputy in a law enforcement agency of 700 plus people, you need to pay the chief deputy, you know, at least in the 140s to 150s to be comparable to Fairfax. And I'm sorry, you need to pay the chief deputy in the 120s to 130s. in order to be comparable with other jurisdictions. So if by statute for the subordinate staff to be competitive, and by statute the sheriff has to make 10% more.
No, okay, that I understand.
You now have to pay a subsidy to the sheriff to get him to the 140, 150 range, so that...
I get that.
Is that kind of what you're looking at, Don?
The director of...
Yeah, that's part of that.
I mean, that's an example.
That's an example.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What I was looking at, and tell me if I'm looking at it, so let's say...
Same things for probation officers.
Okay.
I mean, you
know, Commonwealth attorney, same thing, right?
We pay subsidy.
I'm not sure. He has to be a certain percentage above.
He does.
Well, anyway.
I think we do subsidize
it. It would be a similar example.
But Mr. Walker's talking about at the staff level, too. So in the health department, you have health inspectors, and the state pay scale for inspectors is set for Virginia. So you're in Northern Virginia. In order to get qualified people, you're going to have to pay more than you pay.
So the subsidy is in order to just get the employees you're looking for.
It's to equalize the pay between the county and the state.
Okay, so what I was thinking when you first explained this, it's like, okay, there's some service that people can go to. They can go to the state to receive the services. They can go to the county.
No.
If they go to the state, the state employees get paid X, the county employees get paid more.
Yeah,
and somehow
we're providing
a subsidy to the state employees so they get paid the same amount as the county. That didn't
correct.
Make sense to me.
So you get a county employee, because of Northern Virginia rates, we pay $50,000.
Well,
state scale may be 36.
Well, there is a Northern Virginia differential
that's
paid, too, to state employees.
Is that right?
Yeah, so the Northern Virginia gets the state employees in Northern Virginia in certain divisions get higher pay because it's the Northern Virginia differential, whereas the same employee in another part of the state won't get it.
Wish that were true of transportation. Do we?
Well, you all see it. I mean, on the school, I mean, what it's called is cost to compete.
Right.
On the school side, it's typically unfunded, and then the portions of it get funded. Outside of schools, though, a lot of that is not funded. So
do we...
Some of it is. I mean, that's...
Do we... It's semi-related, but it's a little different than the fees that a taxpayer pays to use a county service that may or may not be subsidized. It's more about the salaries that we're paying to a particular position based on whether they're county and like a county and state hybrid versus all county or all state. I understand why you want to look at it. I'm just not sure it's related to this issue.
I don't think it necessarily is related. I think it's just something we should be looking at. And yeah, this was brought up at the previous board, but I think we should be looking. And there may be some areas where we can address something. There may be areas where it's well under control and there's nothing we can do about it, or it, you know, it's a requirement. Right. But we are an inquisitive, investigative, so to speak, or quasi-investigative, or at least we're looking to see what we can accomplish somewhere. And let's keep the door open.
So we have the scoping for this project here. Moving on to number 4, we now have a new issue, and that is, do we want to look at the state and local... the compensation that's paid to employees that may or may not be state and local funded at the same time? I see it as a
choice. I think you want to look at county subsidies to state employees.
Okay. County subsidies to state
employees. I think that's what you're saying.
I think we pay the administrator too much. We need to check that out.
So, do we want to add to our workload a action item that is county subsidies to state employees?
So I look at it as if there are services that the state provides, the identical services provided by the county, and look at, well, okay, if the state's providing the service, are they being fully utilized or are they not? If we find that these services are available from the state and they're not being fully utilized, why would the county also fund the same services when those people could go to the state funded and the county would no longer have to fund?
Is that happening?
That is something I would be interested in looking at.
That's a different question still.
These are, what we're talking about is it's a combined department. So, for example, the county health department is half state employees half county employees, they all report up to the county health director, Dr. Goodfriend. So they're essentially, you have inspectors, health inspectors in that department. Some of those health inspectors are county employees. Some
but
of those
does
health
the
inspectors
state
are
have
employees.
An obligation to provide them? If the state has the obligation to provide X number of inspectors, then that's their obligation to pay them accordingly.
Correct, and I believe that's the argument that Mr. Walker is making.
So I think,
but there are two arguments that I make. The first issue is there are state employees to whom the county provides additional compensation over and above what the state provides. So Mr. Walker's question is that overage, that extra compensation provided by the county, appropriate? You know, given the level at which the state is paying these individuals, right?
To clarify that a little further, Scott, the person that is, it's a family friend that worked for social services back in the 80s, and worked for the state back in the 80s in social services, working in this locality.
Right.
And the pay was disastrous. And they received...
Well, let's just talk about your own experience.
They received a supplement from the county, and if that person, they commented to me, if they had stayed in that, they didn't stay in the position, they worked 5-10 years or something left. If they had stayed in it today, they'd still be receiving that, although the state has brought that position up to where it should be.
But isn't it equal? I'm sorry, isn't it equalized at the same dollars?
That's what the subsidies do.
Yeah, the subsidies. So,
my concern is, so let's say that you have a county health department and the county pays the employees $30,000 a year to do the job and the state only pays $20,000 and the county says, well, we're going to subsidize the extra $10,000 so they're comparable. Mm-hmm. The state's looking to save money. Well, you know what? We'll cut their salary to $15,000 because we know Loudoun County is going to pay them the other $15,000 to make it the same as their county employees.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah,
if the state has an obligation to provide certain services, then they should be responsible or required.
Well, I think there's also another issue, and if I'm understanding right, that in the case of, let's say, the health department, that there's some state employees, there's some county employees, and so part of what I'm kind of curious about is, if it's a state-provided function, why do we also have employees that are 100% funded by the county?
Because the state does not provide sufficient resources to manage, to staff the operation.
But who makes that decision?
State made by the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
I was just saying, also in certain cases, there can be a mandate from the state where there's a requirement on the county in terms of a certain level of performance, but what's provided by the state is not in and of itself sufficient to meet that level.
So it's an unfunded mandate, is what you're saying.
In certain cases. So in some cases, it's purely a judgment call on the part of the county that we want this in addition to.
Gotcha.
In some cases, the argument can be made that it's really not. Discretionary. We have to provide this because otherwise we're not compliant with what we're required to do. And I don't know which fall into which category.
So, okay, that's a set. I see it as
I see this
personnel way. Who are paid by the state but subsidized by the county, and then departments that have employees that are both state-funded and county-funded.
Right, two different questions.
Are
the subsidy levels still appropriate?
Right.
So how would we go about investigating that? It seems to me that one question would be, let's look at all the cases in which the aggregate compensation of the state employees who are paid partially by the state and partially by the county is higher than the compensation that the county pays for a similarly situated employee. Because if we find situations where the aggregate compensation is higher than what we would pay a similarly situated person, that's a red flag to me. That the subsidy from the county is too high. Would you agree that that's a good way to control for that?
One way.
I think that's exactly the argument. So I think the real question is, and this would be an outrage personally, could that possibly happen to similarly situated employees? Here's the state being paid here or something, and that somehow they end up above our people or not? In other words, an equalization issue.
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it, okay? If you have two employees, same qualifications, same tenure, they're going to be within a couple thousand dollars of each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Now, the challenges that you get into, which throw that off a little bit sometimes, is the Commonwealth and the county don't give pay increases at the same rates, at the same time. You know, some years the state gives a pay increase and the county doesn't. Some years the county gives a pay increase and the state doesn't. And so, you know, then we do manual calculations because, you know, you're not going to, because now you're into portions. So you get a raise on your state portion, the county give a raise, so you don't get.
Does that create a morale problem? I mean, are people aware that there might be a delta between the two? But similarly situated, I realize similarly situated.
I mean, generally speaking,
it's all public record. I mean, yeah.
Generally speaking, the county employees are better compensated than the state employees. But
even after the supplement?
Generally speaking, but I mean, if you get a state employee that's been here a long time, they're going to be making more. And their subsidy is going to be a lot higher, quite frankly, just because of the history of the state pay scale. So you take Don's case, as a magistrate, they were paid dirt when he was a magistrate. So the subsidies could be as much as 50%. Today, magistrates are paid closer to market. So we no longer provide subsidies. In fact, we're precluded by law from providing subsidies to magistrates today.
Yeah.
Okay, because they made a decision to pay 100% of whatever the market is in Northern Virginia. But we still have some magistrates that are here from when Don was a magistrate who are getting 50% of their salary as a supplement. Now, you know, if you take away 50% of pay, they're going to quit. Maybe that's okay. There's only three magistrates or four magistrates, so maybe it doesn't matter. But then you got operations like the health department where half of the department are county employees. You know, if you took the position, well, it's a state function. Let's just get rid of all the county employees.
That's a different question. We haven't gotten there yet.
Well, see, and that's, you know, that's the problem.
You're now into...
We're way off topic of this. So are we choosing to add an additional...
But it's like county employees, and the health department employees, because of... You know, it's a different, slightly different model from the magistrates. The county employees, state employees in the health department, some of them are maybe 2 or 3% in terms of subsidy. Some of them are going to be 14 or 15%. It really depends on when they were hired. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what happened with pay increases.
How many people are we talking about here? Dozens?
What are we doing?
50 to 70 people.
Please.
50 to 70 people.
I think we should work on the task we've been specifically given. And if we finish this up relatively quick and we want to tear into another one, well, then we look at this to go into after we finish this.
I would second what Cliff says. That, you know, let's
I agree.
Parking lot this.
It's
what we did before where each person took on an individual issue and reported back, maybe. But otherwise, I mean, I think I'm not sure it's productive to divide the efforts of the committee. I mean, does anybody disagree with that?
I don't disagree with it. I think that the specific question that Don raised with respect to subsidies could be quickly addressed and filtered with a query to the payroll data as to, you know, please report out any material discrepancies, which I would define as 5% of pay between subsidized. Partially state-paid and county-subsidized employees and county employees. And if there's a big discrepancy that shows up showing that those state employees who get a subsidy from the county are paid more than county employees, then there's a problem. If there are animals, then there's not a problem.
Scott, that would not reflect the positions where there is one employee from the state doing a specific task, but there is no county employee that does that task. It's
correct.
A state-only job.
So the magistrates
so wouldn't reflect that?
The magistrates would not reflect that because yeah. Those are state employees.
But they're not. But that's no longer an issue because at least, except for people that have tenure and have been grandfathered in,
correct.
No future magistrate will be paid out of the county with the county subsidy. So it's kind
well, I wouldn't say it's necessarily not an issue because, you know, it kind of begs the question, well, if new magistrates are being 100% paid for by the state, then why aren't the old magistrates being 100% paid for by the state?
Because they got caught in the change.
But is that something that can be corrected, if you will?
I don't know that we could tell the state you're going to fix this.
We could correct it, we'll just limit the subsidy, they'll quit, and then we'll hire new magistrates.
And we might even hire the same person.
There you go.
You know what?
But I think that getting
being close to the magistrate system, there's no reason for us to be discussing changing the magistrate personnel or system right now, unless we're going to look at everything. We kind of got off on a tangent.
Understood.
About what is really a public safety issue. That
I mean, the sheriff's department depends on those magistrates.
Absolutely, that's my point. Are we really?
I was not suggesting that we get rid of people. I'm just trying to say how big an issue is this? Okay, is it really small or is it
$100,000 for the magistrates?
Yeah, how long does it take? Those three or four, it's costing us $100,000 a year. Is that what it's costing us?
Ballpark, maybe. Okay. I mean, off the top of my head.
All right, so back to my original proposal, which was you run a query of the payroll database to discover whether there's any material difference between pay levels for people that are, for individuals who are subsidized, partially state paid, partially county paid, and those who are fully county paid. We've determined the magistrates wouldn't show up on that. We've determined it doesn't matter. So I think if we get that data, then you can take a look at it and determine whether there's more you want to look into. Is that a tremendously time-consuming request?
I don't think so. If it is, I'll get back to the committee.
All right.
Yeah, we will have to not, make the information somewhat anonymous.
Correct. I think we're only looking to establish whether there's a pattern there that bears further.
I interpret that as we don't want names on it.
Yes.
Which makes sense. We don't want that. No.
Cliff, did you have another next steps point you want to make about schools?
Yeah. I didn't know if we've. I know we talked about it. I didn't know if we'd finally put it to bed. The issue with working with the school board about combining things, we kind of got stymied. Well, the school board said, well, maybe you can pick one or two, and we'll kind of redirect them to work with you on that. Or we talked about making the recommendation to both boards is, you know what, you guys ought to each pick your own people, school board, board of supervisors, get together, and then there'll be maybe a little more buy-in from both sides, because they picked their people to work on this issue. Because I just got off the phone before I came with the school board members on the joint committee and kind of threw back, well, if you give us one or two things, maybe then we could, focus on it. Well, I think we may be beyond that at this point that we're looking. I told him the idea of, let the school board pick a few, let the board of supervisors pick a few, then maybe both parties will have a little more buy-in into the result. So, but I didn't know if we'd firmly came to what our conclusion was. If that was going to be a recommendation, or if we were still possibly going to consider pursuing this. My recommendation would be that we don't at this point and make the recommendation to the two bodies. You pick your own people to work specifically on this issue. Because I'm trying to come from the direction that we did didn't seem to get the cooperation that we were looking for.
I would agree with them. And where we left it with the board was we reported out to them and communicated to them the stumbling blocks that we had run into. A number of members of the board are from the dais, at least expressed themselves to be committed to the prospect of coming to a better modus operandi on this with the members of the school board going forward, and they said they would take it up to the joint board of supervisors school board committee. So I think at this point in time, absent a real mandate from those two boards to a group to investigate this in a serious fashion, I think that we'll be beating our heads against the wall. That's my view. So that was where we had left it at our last meeting, if I recall, Mr. Woodbeck.
Yep. So, again, to me it's still open-ended. Because let's say the joint board gets together and comes back, well, reform, we think you should still pick one or two issues and then let us know which two those are, and then we'll try to get more involvement. Then we may end up in the same position again, as opposed to us saying we think this is not the appropriate body at this point to resolve this. We think you need to create your own.
Well, that's kind of why we left it to them, because we could go back and forth on and on and on.
But I don't want to go back and forth. My point is that we think we're done.
Well,
I don't know that we've told them.
I think that's kind of how we left it, is we're done unless there's some huge development that comes. So,
I mean, are we opposed to looking into it because we don't want to deal with it, or are we simply opposed to looking into it because we don't feel like we're getting the assistance that we need?
In my opinion, we will get the same level of assistance we got the first time around.
Yeah. I think it's
which is done.
I think we're done. I mean, unless somebody has a different... I mean,
but my concern is, because I just spoke to a member of the jury, why don't you guys look at maybe throwing one or two issues up back? Like, they're still thinking we should be the ones looking into this. I just don't think we are.
I think if the joint board can essentially commit to us that we'll get the support that we need from both sides, and particularly from the schools, since we know that's what the issue is.
They committed to us the first time.
Well, but until
emphatically committed.
Well, I'll say until we have until we have that again. There's nothing need be done as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, it's more that, you know, we're ready to help you if you guys can get your act together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the other option would be to make a specific recommendation that they convene jointly a commission that is chartered, that has the mandate and the support of both sides of the system to do exactly what we set out to do.
But that's where I think we should go. And
we've intimated that in our report to the Board of Supervisors. We talked about the fact that other jurisdictions have been successful when they have had such an approach, but we have not, as a commission, made such a recommendation. And I think that would be a good way to close the matter out, because our timetable is that we plan at this point to have concluded our commission by May. So even if they came back to us tomorrow and said, we'd like you to look into this again. You know, we've been at this for a year and 3 months, and I think that it's time to, bring things to a close. So I think that if they want to go after it, they should reconstitute a commission with just that charter. It's a year's worth of work to do just that, and they should do it.
And that's where I think we should go, is to give it a sense of finality from us that we don't think we're the body. This is what we think you should do. Rather than even leave it open-ended that, well, maybe they'll kick it back to us with a, quote, renewed level of support from the school.
I nominate Mr. Kirsch to draft said recommendation. Any seconds? I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
Would you mind taking a stab at it?
Sure.
Perfect. I think it's a great idea, too.
So we have kind of scoped out three different areas that we're going to go through this year. And I think that's a good start. Outsourcing report is going to be April 19th at 5. If anybody's interested, other than that, there's no other business on the agenda. Next meeting is April 2nd here, and I think that's it. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
The fireman is too busy running.
All right, you can stop the tape now.
That's it.